It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we begin a week of giving thanks, it's a very special Monday here on Red Eye Radio. Gary, what do you know?
Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3.
I'm just testing my voice. Both you and I with upper respiratory infections or whatever we have. It's just it's not COVID.
We know that it's not COVID. My body's ability to fight it, according to my pulmonologist recently, has changed because of COVID, he believes. And so they've got me on a number of steroids. And quite frankly, my arms are really huge.
I'm not messing with you.
Yeah, you know. So, it's my wife and I both. For a few weeks now, have not been able to kick this. And repeated testing for COVID and the flu and negative for both. The good news, really not much of a fever to speak of. And so, you know, that's when your body is really battling it. But even through antibiotics and steroids, it's still, you know, clinging on. And my pulmonologist warned me of that in October. I had to leave one night during the show, and I was having what was really an asthma attack at that point. The steroids really did a good job once I got on them, daily steroid, and I was going to I'm supposed to be on those for a few months, if not longer. It's a common steroid for asthma. And you know, other than not being able to breathe, I feel fine.
Well, for me, it was just it was starting like I think it was Thursday morning show. At the end of the show, I was like, ah, my voice just seems like it doesn't have what it normally has. And then Friday came along, and can't tell you how many times I turned off the microphone.
While
you were talking in order to. And then it got a little bit worse on Saturday. And then Sunday, you know, I was cutting the lawn and doing everything and come back in. It was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was so tired, and I went, oh, no.
Mm.
I went COVID.
Yeah.
Because I've never tested positive for COVID. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Took a test. I was fine.
Yeah.
So I was so tired. About 4 o'clock, I said, okay, I'm going to try to get I'll be able to fall asleep and get 6 hours of great sleep. I could not sleep. I didn't get any sleep. Last night, I woke up at, Sunday morning at 5 a.m., so by the time I get off here, it'll be 24 hours without any sleep.
It's
and the voice, you know. And then when I woke up, my head was swimming and everything else. And I went, well, I can't call in sick now, but let me make sure I don't have COVID. And so I checked again, did another test before I came in. So you know, from what I know, this upper respiratory infection, aside from what you have, has been going around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, wow.
Yeah, that, and they said that there is, and I saw this over the weekend from local news source saying that right now there's a spike in flu cases in our area. Again, my wife and I are both negative for the flu through all this. So I thought to myself, well, I guess I will count myself lucky. But, yeah, that's the one thing that has been persistent, especially over the last week and a half. This feels different than what I had early October. And I think it is. I think it's just compounding the problem that I had. And so hopefully the steroids and antibiotics will finally kick it. If not, maybe I'll get some bionic lungs or something. But so we'll see.
But not what we want heading into a holiday week.
No, it's going to prohibit my travel. So not great. But I am still grateful and thankful nonetheless. My folks will have plenty of folks around them to hang out with and enjoy mm-hmm. the games and the food. I am grateful that it gives us a few days, a very long weekend to rest and hopefully finally kick this thing out, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So mine's just an upper respiratory. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
It'll be gone. It'll be gone a day or two. My thing is I can't talk for a long time.
Right.
The voice just starts going, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right now it feels okay. It's not like when you get laryngitis. So when I get laryngitis, it's like I have to work to talk, how you're fighting to talk.
Yeah, right.
I don't feel, even though you probably can hear it in my voice, I'm not fighting to talk. It mm-hmm. feels okay, but it's like, jeez.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, man, don't be COVID.
Yeah, that's the one thing that obviously you want to, that you're concerned with. I told my wife is, everybody's back in the office, that we never really left. We never left. We
right.
always came in. But the rest of the world didn't, and her office has been back for quite some time. Even during COVID, she was going in because of some of the things that she has to do on site. But here lately, over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, she's been working from home. And that's because you go in, the one thing you can't do anymore, Nate Bargatze, the greatest average American, his latest stand-up special, which came out, did it come out in 2020? He recorded it in 2020, and they did it outside, but he said, he starts out with COVID. Everybody in the audience is wearing a mask, and the tables are spaced apart and the whole thing. And he talks about, one thing you can't do anymore is cough in public. And I was talking to my wife about that. I said, you really can't do that anymore. If you have a persistent cough, you're going to start making people nervous. You say that you tested for COVID and you don't have COVID. But everybody around the office is freaking out. So they tend to send you home. And so I'll tell you, I'm thankful for all the services, though, that deliver groceries. And I've already got my virtual cart filled with all the stuff for Thanksgiving to be delivered on Tuesday. I'm going to go over it one more time in the morning and then order everything delivered on Tuesday so I can actually, cook something for Thanksgiving on Thursday. And over the weekend, also ordering prepared food. That's the one thing when you're sick these days is that in most areas, you can get, or in most metro areas, you can get stuff delivered. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm not as bad as you are, which is good. But it's how long can I talk? That's it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was cutting the lawn yesterday. I was doing outside work, and it was when I came back in where I went, whoa. So hopefully it's a 24-hour thing for me.
And all right.
Everything will be cool. We got a great show ahead. Man, what a weekend it was. Elon Musk does a public relations popularity contest, and Trump is back, but he won't be back.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that. CBS leaves Twitter and then comes back.
Mm.
Garland names a special counsel for Trump. We'll get into that. No special counsel for Hunter Biden and Joe.
No.
Go woke, get fired. Disney brings back their old CEO for 2 years. Who does
yeah,
that? Who goes out to get a CEO for 2 years who had retired a few years ago?
That's how bad it is, I guess. That's, Yep. And, we used to be owned by Disney. And I knew we were going to be sold when he talked about when Iger back then, who's returning, talked about, someone asked him a question at a meeting about radio. What about the radio division? And he held up a DVD. I forget which one it was. But he says, on the release day of any DVD we put out, we make more than the entire, in that one day, the entire radio division does in a year. I thought, oh, we're being sold. And sure enough, we did. And we work for a great company now. They are not a Mickey Mouse company.
No, no, they are not. And just so people know, when we work for Disney, they left us alone.
They did.
They really they did. I don't know if they would have the last couple of years if they would have.
Once they discovered us, they didn't. But, yeah, for the most part, they did.
Yeah, but I wonder if they would have.
Oh, now you mean?
Over the last 3 years.
Oh, I don't.
That's a good thought.
A good question to ask. I don't know. I don't know that they would. Maybe that was the point. I mean, think about ESPN. You know, how dare you talk about sports?
Yeah.
You need to do 15 minutes on social issues.
As we always said to Disney, probably wasn't smart for a company that focuses completely on children to decide to die on the hill that they believe that five-year-olds should be taught sexual content.
Yeah. That's not going to bode well.
As we always stated, did nobody in that room stand up and say, guys, gals, maybe we should, or whatever gender you are, guys, gals, look, do you really want to do it as Disney, die on the hill of saying, oh, by the way, it's fine and dandy. And by the way, our governor is an evil person because he does not want schools to teach content that has sexuality in it to five-year-olds.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how far gone it is that you have to bring in the old CEO for 2 years.
Right.
Because you can't put anybody in. This is how I looked at it. You can't put anybody in who's beneath him because they all agreed to do the things that have hurt them over the last few years.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. You didn't promote from within. You brought back the old CEO. What does that tell you?
Nobody stood up and said, maybe we should rethink this.
Yeah.
We're Disney.
Right.
Just amazing.
Well, it's, you know, we said, go ahead, jump into the culture wars. You think you're going to be a hero, and what they missed all along was that you're not going to war with DeSantis or the legislative body of Florida. You're going to war with the parents, and you won't win. The parents.
Yeah, that's right.
The parents control the money that goes to your parks, to your streaming, to your merchandise. That's how it works. Don't go to war with the parents. And furthermore, create an environment where they believe their children are going to be safe from that kind of material at every turn within your product, wherever they are. Oh, we're so far past that. When you jump in and you decide you're going to do that as a company like Disney, you've decided you're going to be a part of the indoctrination from the far left radicals. People don't need Disney. Children don't need Disney. And that's where it stops for me. That's where it all starts and stops. That's it. It's not a necessity. All of these agenda items that you want to throw in front of parents, and then this, you know, I mean, beyond that, we've already heard from the left, Disney hasn't been a part of this, but it's still the same mentality of parents don't have a place in the classroom. I mean, that's essentially, Disney was a part of that, because if you were going to war with the legislative body and the governor of Florida to stop the parental rights bill, that's what you were saying, that the parents don't have a say-so. So let me retract that statement from earlier. Yes, you do believe that the parents don't belong in the classroom. That's scary.
Hopefully we have a show tonight.
We're pretty sure something is going to happen. We don't know what it's going to be.
Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold temperatures and water can lead to only one outcome, and ice has no place in a truck's air system. That's why you must keep your air system moisture-free as the temperatures begin to drop. A simple step toward keeping your air system moisture-free is manually draining the air tanks. You should drain your air tanks more frequently if your vehicle has a high air demand. Moisture that is not removed by the dryer must be manually drained from the tanks. Pay attention to how much water and contaminants drain out. Too much water indicates the air dryer isn't working properly, and too much oil may indicate that the air compressor is worn. Make sure your air system is in top condition before plunging temperatures put it to the test.
This report brought to you by Lubrifiner, engineering filters that are built to do more for heavy-duty fleets since 1996.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Also coming up here, Biden signs up for climate reparations. Yeah, I'd like to see when Congress passes that bill. We're going to send billions of dollars to other countries.
Yeah.
Right. California's got a budget crunch. We'll tell you about the school board that says women should accept biological males to compete with them because, hey, you're not going pro anyway.
Ah, right. Yeah. Come on. Go sit down.
Come on, Jackie.
Come on, Jackie. I'm serious. Oh, it's not a joke.
Gosh.
Come on. I'm serious. It's not a joke.
Wow.
Come on, Jack. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Wow. It just becomes more and more arrogant.
I mean, the misogyny is just unbelievable.
Nah, come on. You're not going pro anyway. What are you going to do? Come on.
You're a woman.
Yeah, you're a woman.
You're a woman. You're not going anywhere.
Right.
We're liberals.
Yeah.
We care about women. You're not going anywhere. Let the guy compete with you.
That's right.
What's wrong with you?
Right.
I mean, my God, the women hatred from the left right now, the misogyny that exists today in the Democratic Party is really just mind-boggling.
It's insane.
Yeah, it is. Really, and they just keep going.
And they do it as if they're proud of it.
Yeah. And as if they're some type of freedom fighter.
Yeah.
I'm fighting for the rights. I'm fighting for there's no
right
for a man to compete with a woman. There is
no
right.
No, there isn't. And you know, it's as if they're saying to women, listen, we gave you the right to vote a long time ago. We gave you some rights with the Civil Rights Act. You had it for a long time. Now give it to somebody else. I mean, that's basically what they're saying.
Or look, you know, look, we gave you this, and you had it for half a century. And,
yeah.
And now, you know, come on. The best you can do is the WNBA and the LPGA.
Yeah, come on.
That's pro. You're not going pro.
That's not pro.
That's not pro. So men only. I believe the next thing should be only men's sports. Why are we wasting? Because that's what they're saying by coming out with that. By saying women can't. Well, I mean, women really don't go pro, and all these different things.
Well, look what all the parents could spend the money on, right? Of their adolescent daughters in sports. It costs a lot of money. Wow, the parents could go spend their money on other things. That's the liberal excuse book, by the way, I'm working from. They could do a lot of other things. Their girls are never going to go pro.
What they just said. It'll be on our app and website to hear later this morning.
Uh-huh.
Red Eye Radio Show.com.
Yeah.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. Thanks for all the people that asked about my dad over the weekend, and he was fine. They only got probably over a 36-hour period, just 10 inches of snow. Mm. What people have to understand is the snow band is not that wide.
Mm-hmm.
What you saw is the areas that it got that were hit that period, which was really Orchard Park.
Yeah.
But if you go 10 miles north of Orchard Park, you probably had 10, 12 inches of snow. By the way, Orchard Park, where the Bill Stadium is, got 77 inches of snow.
Mm. Now, is the airport north? Is it?
Yes, the airport's north.
About because I saw one of the representatives from the airport was on Saturday morning with Fox Weather. And she was saying, yeah, well, we had to shut down for a little bit, but we're back up again. I'm like, wow, Buffalo just doesn't stop. Now, so I have to ask the question, for 10 inches of snow, do they even send out plows?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the plows are a lot. And they're really efficient. I don't know exactly how much the airport got. Now, what happened was, you know, it's the snow band, and you could see it. I mean, and actually Fox Weather had some great whatever their radar colors are showing, you know, how long that snow band was. I mean, where it started in Lake Erie, you're talking, you know, 200 miles away, and you could see that thin band, and it went right there. And then you could see that it went up. It was in Orchard Park, and just a little bit south of Orchard Park. And then you could see it started going up.
Right.
And then it went right over Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And then it went right. And the people that I know, a friend of mine, she lives in Buffalo, right near downtown.
Mm.
And she got, I'd say, maybe about 15 inches of snow.
Okay.
And then it moved up through, and then it went into, like, Niagara County.
Yeah.
You know, above, which is where Niagara Falls is, above. And then it slowly came back down again and threw down another, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 inches as it came back down again. But you could watch it. But it was a very thin band of snow. But where it landed, you know, when it sat for 24 hours, basically over Orchard Park.
Yeah,
you see some of the pictures of the stadium.
Uh-huh.
It was like.
Yeah, wow. I did see some of that. Now, they were the Bills were going to practice on Friday. They canceled that. And they moved the game to Detroit. We talked about that.
Yes.
But there was a cancellation of their practice.
Well, they had a bunch of people were sick last week. I think they had just one very short practice all of last week.
Right. Okay.
And then when everybody woke up, you know, Saturday, it's like so many of the players live in Orchard Park because it's a very nice place to live.
Mm.
I mean, it's like rolling hills and, you know, you've got million-dollar homes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the place to live, and probably a five-minute ride. They had some of the players that the Bills actually put out a video, and they showed all the, you know, the people in the, you know, in the stadium,
mm-hmm.
Calling all the players, what's going on, where are you?
Yeah.
And then they got one guy out in the truck looking for players that are walking to the stadium to catch the buses to take them to the airport.
Oh, wow.
And because the practice the practice facility, all the offices and everything is right there at the stadium.
Hmm.
So all of a sudden you look and it's like, okay, we got four players walking. And all of a sudden you look, the guy's driving. There they are. These four players are walking.
Yeah, wow.
And then some of the players that were able to make it in, I don't even know who it was, a long winter jacket with shorts on. But they all talked about how their neighbors were, the neighbors knew. And so it's like, you got to get out. And so the neighbors were all in force.
Right.
You know, I know Josh Allen was talking about it. Mm. Jordan Poyer was talking about it, that they, you know, they're shoveling them. And then I saw one sports reporter said, these are multimillionaires. Can't they afford plows? Yeah, they probably can, but just because you get a plow when you've got 77 inches of snow, that plow may not arrive.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much money you pay, that plow may not arrive. And they had the I can't think of the name of the snow removal machine with the bucket in the front. I can't think of what they call those.
The snow thrower?
No. It's got a bucket. You use it. I mean, it's on construction sites.
Mm.
But you can sit there and go down, and it lifts up the snow, and you can move it over there.
I saw the two that got stuck. Yeah, one was pulling one out.
One was pulling the other out.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, that is the most snow Wait a minute. I think it was the 66 inches of snow.
Yeah, yeah.
In the first day, that was the most snow ever in one day.
Yeah.
So, and it was the perfect storm. You had a lake that was in the 50s.
Right.
And you had extremely cold air that came over it, and it's like, okay. And in that direction, if it would have been 10 miles south, if the wind would have been just a degree or two different, it would have gone where it normally goes, which is, you know, south of, well, Orchard Park is sort of the beginning of the snow belt.
Right, right.
And then, but south of it really is where you get more of it. As you get 10, 15, 20, 30 miles, you know, south of it, then when you get to ski country.
So,
like Kissing Bridges and other places like that. And that's why there's hills there. The Boston Hills start, then the Allegheny Mountains, you know, and Allegheny State Park, then down in Pennsylvania, the National mm-hmm. Park, and it mm-hmm. just keeps, you know. And so, but anywhere in Lake Erie, depending on where the wind is coming from, you know, you can get it. Watertown, you know, some of the towns around Watertown off Lake Ontario, they got pounded.
Yeah. Wow.
But Dad was all right. Some people, are you concerned about, it's 10 inches of snow. He's fine. Don't worry about it. Dad's okay.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question. It was actually kind of a joke. But, you know, wow, do you even send the plows out for 10 inches of snow? Come on. But, you know, that's the one thing. Growing up as a kid, you know, I was born in Omaha and lived there for the first 4 years of my life. And I actually remember the snow. We got a ton of it. And we lived on Offutt Air Force Base. And we had this huge, we lived in a cul-de-sac, had this huge hill in the backyard. We didn't have a fence. It was base housing. We didn't have a fence. It was this open field with a huge hill. And so we had toboggans and the whole thing. We were geared up for winter, you know. Then we moved from there to Texas. My dad, that's when he went to fight in the Vietnam War and lived in North Texas for a couple of years. When he got home, we moved to San Antonio. And San Antonio got snow. I don't know. It was the first time in a long time. They obviously rarely get snow, but it was enough to get our sleds out, our toboggans and everything else. And we were some of the only kids on the block that had that because we had lived in Nebraska. And I remember that. It's like, oh, man, it was great. But I got to be honest with you. All the magic of snow, for me, as I get older, it's like, you know, unless I know I can get around. That's the thing about Buffalo. It's like, yeah, all right, we'll get it done. We'll get the roads cleared. So states that are and areas that are prepared for that. I went through Colorado and went up on this highway after a massive snowstorm. It was a couple, probably 36 hours after the snow ended. Everything was fine. Roads were fine, I mean. And so it was, you know, I just thought, man, you know, it's not just a luxury. That's a necessity, mm-hmm. you know. But
well, I just looked here. By the way, the crow flies, probably my dad is about 20 miles from the stadium north. Mm. It's 24.8 miles to his house, but it's taking the roads, which you can, so
right.
It's probably 21, 22 miles.
Okay.
So, and so it shows you just how thin it was. And the thing is, they can handle, now the suburbs handle it fine. In Buffalo, where the houses were built before people had cars, so there's no driveways.
Yeah.
People park on the street.
Yeah,
and it's impossible to get a plow down. When you live in the suburbs, you can't park. Normally, it's November 1st. I think it was extended in a lot of the suburbs up there, probably because some of the nice weather. But normally, it's after November 1st. You have to be off the street at 1 a.m. Doesn't matter whether you're just visiting anybody. You got to be off the street.
Right.
Because the plows just fly up and down, and they just never, you know, you'll get buried.
Yeah,
you get a big snow like this, you may not get your car out for a couple of months.
You know, that's the thing. Somebody, it wasn't this year. It wasn't with this storm, but another storm. And they were saying, well, this is what they need up north. And it was I don't know how new this invention is, but it was a truck that had a snow thrower that basically threw all the snow in the back end of the truck and carried it off. And I thought, Well, yeah, you can't do that. You'd have to go empty the truck between every house. You're not going to, that's not going to be practical for that kind of snowfall.
No, you're not. You're not parking lots, maybe, to move it.
Yeah, right.
You can dump it and then move it to someplace
right.
near the parking lot. And that's the interesting thing that when if everything works out all right and this and I can stay with Dad, depending on where this upper respiratory infection goes, it'll be interesting as I probably – if anybody who got like – if they got 2 feet and mm-hmm. I'm driving back, mm-hmm. you'll just see these huge – I mean where houses are – where the plows went down, it's just, it'll be 7-8 foot high in Orchard Park that I guarantee I'll stay away from, even though probably by the time I got back on Tuesday, it would be fine just because they're supposed to be melting a little bit. And once they get the salt on, they salt up there.
Yeah, right.
They salt, they plow. There's no cars allowed.
Right.
It's probably fine in Orchard Park now. You probably can go anywhere. So they clear it real. Now, the city of Buffalo, as I said, whole different ballgame because that's what happened in the blizzard of 77. People couldn't get out. They couldn't do anything.
Yeah,
plows couldn't get down the street, and you had 30-foot drifts. What do you do?
Yeah.
You wait for it to melt.
Right. Yeah.
So that's
And a fairly decent warming trend this week in the next few days. That's already started, I think, or going to start Monday or Tuesday in that area, which, as you mentioned, will help.
38, 40 degrees is what I was seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It'll start melting, but the salt takes care of everything.
Yeah.
Including your vehicles.
Yeah. No joke. Yeah. Car washes must make a ton of money up there.
Oh.
I mean, you just got to keep them rinsed up, don't you? Yeah. I mean, you just pretty much have to. I know big rigs, friends of mine that drive big rigs talk about that. It's just a thing. You know, you go through a truck wash, get that salt off of your truck as often as possible.
Well,
it's just so corrosive.
I have, my old vehicle that is almost 19 and a half years old.
Yeah.
You think I would have that vehicle if I lived in New York?
Oh, man, no way. Not if you don't get the undercoating.
I mean, the thing, even if you get the undercoating.
Yeah, yeah.
It gets in there and the salt gets in everywhere. And
Seinfeld reference. Remember when he was selling the car to, was it called, selling it to Jerry? You want the undercoating?
Yeah. And then he says something like, don't get it. It's garbage.
Yeah,
no, it's garbage. It's not. I mean, it's not, but it's just the salt.
But it's only going to last. I mean,
the salt gets into areas, it just.
If the salt's going to, eat away at the frame and body, it's definitely going to take care of that coating. It will get you some protection at some point. You're going to run out of that protection or get it recoated. I don't know.
My father had one car where the frame just rusted out and just went boom.
Oh, my gosh. Fell. Wow.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, Merrick Garland names a special counsel, special prosecutor for Trump. We will get to that. CBS leaves Twitter and then comes back, and Elon Musk and his publicity stunt over the weekend.
Mm.
And I'm just like, well, basically, you decide whether Trump comes back.
Right, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really now?
Yeah. Yeah. He put a poll up. And
so it's not freedom of speech anymore. It's a popular vote.
Yeah.
As to whether Trump comes back. And the thing I was always thinking, and I didn't know this, but he can come back to Twitter. But according to his contract with Truth Social, he has to announce there anything he puts out there. I guess you can't call it a tweet, but anything that he puts out there, he has to wait 6 hours before he tweets it on Twitter.
Right. Yeah. Well, and even then, if you come back to Twitter, how are the investors in your company in Truth Social going to react to that? If you have a constant presence, they may say, I don't know. They may come back and say, okay, ultimately it's beneficial. You promote us if you're on Truth Social. Anywhere that you're promoting us outside of our own forum is going to be beneficial. Or we don't want you on Twitter because it promotes the use of Twitter more than it does Truth Social. I don't know. I have no idea what the ultimate reaction would be, but he'll know because they'll tell him. You know, that's going to be something that's, you know, this is you build something out and you want it to, you know, you want it to fly. You want it to take off. And we'll see if that's going to be the case. And again, maybe they see it as leveraging for Truth Social to say, all right, it will help us bring more people to Truth Social. I don't know.
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howe's Products. Visit HowesProducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when you choose.
And thank you.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I had to use the cough button there.
No. Right. You know what I learned?
Yes.
That button doesn't make you cough. That's good.
Yeah, it is good.
Yeah.
Merrick Garland comes out and says there's going to be a special counsel for Trump.
Yeah. All right.
Well, when I heard it the other day, I burst out laughing. And then he took no questions at the end. You know, he's trying to be trying to portray to the public he's this whole nonpartisan guy. And that's why the special counsel has, he announced the special counsel to keep him away, from it. And then you look at it and you say, okay, but you've had for a significant period of time, for over 2 years, on Hunter Biden. You've had that laptop. You know all that information that leads right to the president. Where's the special counsel there?
Right.
It leads right to the president.
Yep. And nobody's disputing the laptop stuff anymore.
No, Associated Press is.
Disputing the laptop stuff?
Well, they just say there's no evidence at all of Joe Biden.
Oh, you mean they're just wiping it clean?
Right.
Yeah.
I'll find the story.
But they get their some cleaner from Hillary Clinton. We'll just wipe it clean.
It's like, and it was just like they got just blasted for it. It was like, well, there's something they can find that Joe Biden. There's nothing they can find that Joe Biden did, and the Republicans haven't brought up anything. It's like. Well, technically, the Republicans haven't. The laptop has.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing is that if you want to be delusional, what they're saying is no hard evidence. The next thing they'll say is, well, nobody's admitting to it.
Here it is. The Associated Press claims Saturday that Republicans have not spoken about the family's foreign business dealings. False. Republicans have submitted a recording of Joe Biden leaving a voicemail for Hunter Biden about a business deal with a Chinese energy company, along with the whistleblowers that have stated Joe Biden was intimately involved in the Biden family business. On Saturday, the Associated Press falsely claimed Joe Biden has said that he's never spoken to his son about his foreign business, and nothing the Republicans have put forward suggests otherwise. I mean, that's an absolute lie.
That is a flat-out lie.
And you're delusional. And I guess you could say the Republicans put it out, but it was out. It was in the laptop contains that. And they have the witnesses. They have witnesses. They've got the – they know the lie that Biden has told. Biden still said – Karine Jean-Pierre just didn't answer the question the other day.
Mm. Yeah, right. Yeah. No, just move on.
She has been answering, saying, even Jen Psaki, the president stands by what he has said.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't say that.
Right. No, she didn't. Now, just ignore it and hope it'll go away.
And so the thing is Garland going to ignore
any criminal referrals that come from the Republicans.
Right.
He claims he is fair because now this sets up where the Republicans are going to be bringing all this out. How is the Department of Justice going to react? Now, the Republicans last week came out with, as we have said, and by the way, people, calm down.
Yeah. All right. We'll all take a breath.
Yeah. Let's take a breath here. Yeah. We got frustrated with the Republicans coming out, you know, coming out of the one day after they took the House.
Mm-hmm.
And we passionately believe that they should focus what they focused in on before.
Well, it should start with the current leadership, you know, and it is right now. It is Kevin McCarthy, whether he gets the votes January 3rd or not. It is Kevin McCarthy, and he should have stepped up there, and they should have in unison. We want to see more from them. That's the whole thing, is that
right.
We want them to be successful, and we want them to win in 24 the White House and retain the House and then get the Senate. Those are key elements in moving the conservative agenda forward.
Right, and when you look at this election, because I had one person comment, well, that didn't work in the election. Mm-hmm. That didn't work at all. And so they should bring up Hunter Biden first, because bringing up inflation and all that didn't work in the election. Yeah, it did.
Oh yeah, sure.
Of course it did. Mm-hmm. Where it didn't work is in statewide elections for the Senate, where it was clear, and they made it clear, those particular candidates, that the election of 2020 and the Stop the Steal, all the way up till, you know, they won their primaries and then some afterwards, that was their number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who did not do that in the Republican Party fared much better.
Right. Yeah,
I saw Nugent, I think the whole thing of, well, 90% of who Trump endorsed, you know, looking at, you know, Congress and state races and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just because he'd endorsed them did not mean that they were Stop the Steal.
Right. Right.
You know, don't change the topic here.
Right.
Don't sit there and try to let's not play.
It's not the endorsement. It's the message that they sent out during their campaign.
Right. And the House of Representatives. Total different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing that the Senate shows is he's lost his national influence significantly with Republicans.
Right.
With independents. And then afterwards, with the different polling out there, even the polling that shows him still with an 11, 12, 13-point lead, those leads were 40, 38 and 40 just a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it did eat, and what and the reason that Republicans are doing what they're doing, you may not like to hear this. I mean, it's tough to hear it when you practice political idolatry for a person. It's tough to hear things of that person. We don't practice that here on the show. We simply look and say, okay, you know, what is it here? What do these people represent? And did they, and it's easy to look at it. That's why there hasn't been much talk on it. I saw Nugent over the weekend. Ted Nugent put it out. It's great success, 90%. And even Ted Nugent fans said, Ted, you're missing the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking the statewide elections, not congressional districts, the majority of them that are gerrymandered safe for red districts. So you might be able to do that in some districts. But look at Boebert, for example, how close that race was.
Yeah.
That race should have never been that close.
No, not even close.
And so whether you like it or not, that is the reality / perception of Republican donors and many, many Republicans who look and say, okay, we need to win in the next election.
Yeah.
And
that's it. If you're not going to be honest about where your deficits were, then how do you fix them?
And our point was simply this, not that they don't bring up, for God's sakes, do you listen to the damn show? I'm sorry, I had to say that to a few people. You ever listen to the show? you guys want to let Biden off the hook? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what.
No, I got a couple of you guys are. I guess you guys are just full blown liberals now.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, it just became.
And by the way, we haven't heard that before since we started criticizing the Bush administration in 2005.
You get that.
Grab a torch.
But as we stated, the first day should have been all the things that the American public are concerned with, the issues that affect them, and that was inflation, economy, border, crime. Lee Zeldin won on crime.
Yep.
That's why, excuse me, he didn't win.
He didn't win.
But
we consider that a win in New York.
Exactly. but Lee, and now you've got Republicans saying he's, because he can focus in on the things that people were concerned about.
Yeah,
but he almost, he came close. He did way better than any recent Republican in 20 years because he was able to focus in on the crime issue.
Yeah, right.
And our point is, bring those issues up. You don't ignore, as we said, bring it up the second day. Bring it up later on. Lay out everything.
Yep.
The economy, this. You hit all of that, and then boom. First thing the White House did was, see, the Republicans don't care about inflation. They don't care about this. They just want revenge against Biden.
Right.
Is what the White House said.
Yeah.
And by the time it was Friday, it was like, well, duh. You need to win you need to win everything. You need to win the messaging every single day.
Right.
That's what you need to do. And that's what it's about. As I stated, don't know if this will be a thing in 6 months, but I just want them to do the right thing each and every day when it comes to the substance and how you present the substance.
Yeah, I don't know where any of it is going. I have no idea what the Trump campaign will be able to build going forward. The move by Merrick Garland is clear. It is politically motivated. Barr saying again, you know, that he thinks an indictment will come down, and that may happen. But, you know, I would say that the bigger point or purpose of the assignment of the special counsel is to hang the political cloud over his head for the next 2 years. And then in December of 2024 go, oh, yeah, well, we're not going to indict. I mean, this is what if you get down to the whole Russian collusion hoax, you get down to then from that, the special prosecutor being assigned there, Mueller, and then you get into the fake, both of them, fake impeachments. I mean, these are things, impeachments based on nothing. But those were the things where, okay, we'll just label him. And if the moment he gets back in, boom, we'll go after him again. And we'll just hang the doubt over his head.
And leaks.
Yep. Yeah.
Watch the leaks become, as you know, we stated all the time. And the reason Barr, I think, said that he believes he's going to be indicted is not, I don't think the motivation behind the Department of Justice is that he had top secret, whether or not he had top secret things or not. Hmm. It's that once they did this, once the FBI was involved in it, they believe they have him on obstruction of justice for saying one thing. And we had talked about this. I forgot who wrote it. Who wrote the piece on the fact that his lawyers basically said, we don't have this. We don't have it. We don't have anything top secret. We don't have anything. And then the Department of Justice said, here's the things we want. And they gave them all. And never did they say that any of it was privileged. So by doing that, in essence, they were saying, we weren't telling you the truth.
Right.
Well, who wasn't telling the truth?
Right.
Does it go to his lawyers? Does it go? And so they're looking at obstruction of justice that because they believe it has to be more than just that he had top secret stuff, because everybody has top secret stuff.
Right.
And the fact is, when he handed it back to them, when they handed it back, all the material that the Department of Justice requested, he didn't say, and the lawyers didn't say when they handed it back, and this was a key point, they didn't say the president declassified it on this day.
Right.
They never said the president declassified it, according to reports that we have. If that's what they're looking at, they're looking strictly at obstruction of justice.
Now
you say, what's the motivation for obstruction of justice? He's spiteful towards the Department of Justice. There is no indication that he was selling it. There's no reason. Right. There's nothing that he wants to build a golf course in Saudi Arabia, and therefore he had all this information. He simply... Their allegation is he had the information. Well, what was the motivation for having the top secret material and not handing it back immediately? Did he know? Did he not know?
Hmm.
And these are all questions that nobody knows. But I think Barr believes they're going after, you know, the obstruction of justice. It's not that he had top classified information. It's that they tried to hide the fact that they had it. But what's the motivating factor behind it? What is the intent?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you get back to improving or proving intent. And, you know, and then, you know, from there, what?
Well, if they can't prove intent that he was trying to sell it to the Chinese, something like
right.
that. All right. I mean, just hypothetically, I'm not saying he did.
Yeah, right.
I don't believe he did. But if they don't have that, well, then you get back into the back and forth that it was something that happens between all administrations. We don't have it. Yes, you do. Maybe somebody didn't. Maybe the person that answered didn't think they had it.
Well, that's the thing. And then this gets back. It's like the Danchenko thing. And I think Andrew McCarthy wrote it during the Iggy Danchenko trial, saying, look, this is one of the things, especially one of the lies they're trying to prove, lying to the FBI, is going to be hard because you have to prove that he didn't know it at the time or he knew something at the time and said something else. And so if he's saying he didn't know that at the time, it was about one of the phone calls, then it's going to be impossible to prove that.
Right.
And so in this situation, how do you prove that? Well, they thought they didn't have it. You know, how do you work against that defense, I guess, is the question.
And on January 6th, there's been no evidence produced that he was involved in any type of insurrection.
That's ridiculous that this is even a part of it.
Right.
It's just stupid.
But if you cannot present irrefutable evidence of the intent to use that to benefit yourself in some way, or it was just the arguing going back and forth and the anger back and forth and at the Department of Justice, that's going to be viewed as political all the way across the board.
Yeah. And it already is by many people.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on transport security. Many cargo thefts and hijackings occur within a few miles of a load's origin. Because of this, you need to be alert when leaving the shipper. All doors and windows should be closed until you're on the road. You should also pay extra attention at signal-regulated highways and on- and off-ramps. If you suspect that you are being followed, immediately contact law enforcement and your motor carrier. Other things you can do to stay safe include checking in with your motor carrier on a regular basis, varying your route, and watching for vehicles that may be following you. You should be suspicious of anyone who is signaling for you to stop or pull over. Never share information about your load, pickup and delivery schedules, or routing. And park in well-lit and high-traffic locations, such as truck stops and rest areas. Always be sure to lock your vehicle when stopped and inspect the vehicle and its seals or locks at the end of each stop. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by Pilot Flying J and by Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Trump says he will not return to Twitter. Mm. I mean, I was laughing over the weekend just looking at Twitter. And
oh, my gosh.
All the people saying, Trump's winning. Get your vote in now. Get your vote in now. Mm. Let's bring Trump back. It's like,
yeah.
Are you that stupid? It was it's totally a publicity stunt by Elon Musk, knowing that the vast majority of people that are left on Twitter and likely to answer that question are Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
He knew how that was going to end up. You want rigging an election? And so it was like when he was back on, he's back on. Did you hear? He's back on. I'm like, God, I thought I had to get a life. And then Trump comes out, nah, I'm not coming back on.
It's like, right.
Oh, my God.
What I wonder, and I wondered this before, because I thought once Elon Musk took over, it was pretty likely they would unban Trump.
Yes.
What I wonder is, can you win a presidential election without modern-day conventional social media? I say conventional. You know, I don't know that TikTok you need, but Facebook and Twitter, can you do it? Now, I would argue that if you have enough surrogates and grassroots base, then you can get it done. But the question is, does the campaign believe they can get it done, or do they believe they need a wider presence on social media? And I don't know.
We'll see. We'll know in a year and a half.
We'll know in a year and a half. Right.
In place, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, so with Elon Musk doing it, it was like so obvious. It was just a publicity ploy and for so many people to fall. Okay, get your vote in because we can bring Trump back. It's like, number one, he's probably not coming back. And number two, you shouldn't be deciding whether Trump comes back to Twitter based on popularity, and I expected more of his supporters to say, to hell with you, he should be back on. What do you mean we ought to vote for it? So if we don't get the votes, he doesn't come back on based on the popular vote on Twitter? I thought this was about free speech. And I didn't see Trump supporters doing that. I saw the opposite. We can bring him back. It's like, it's all a fraud.
Well, this is the thing. He was likely going to bring him back anyway.
Yes.
And then he creates this poll, which he claims now 116 million people saw the poll. Okay. It's one post. You know, and look, that's fine. If you're...
And just understand what it is, that's all.
Yeah. If you're trying to rebuild your company, great. Okay, great. But he was going to bring Trump back without the poll. However, you just... And had it been, you know, the Kathy Griffins of the world, you know, all the Karens out there screaming. No, because I looked at it at one point during the day Sunday, and it was 51.8% to 49.1%. So it was like a couple points. I thought, looks like an election. So I look at the... Or 48, did I say 49? 48%. And I think to myself, all right, now that's to be expected. It really was. It is about half and half. And that's the way it was going to go. And if it had gone the other way in the vote, Elon would have said, yeah, well, I own the company, so I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, that's just, and that's just the way he's playing this whole thing out. I think it's hilarious. CBS News made this big deal of quitting. We don't believe it's safe. And then a day later, we're back because we're... And then it was, we're going to closely monitor. What the hell do you mean, closely monitor? Nobody cares.
Nobody can closely monitor.
What are you going to do?
There's hundreds of millions of posts.
Well, what are you going to do? Your job is to report the news. Or your agenda. Your job is to, and you know, someone made the point
let's be careful.
You know, you've had reporters embedded in war for ages. You've covered the worst natural disasters. Oh my gosh, Trump is on Twitter or Elon Musk buys Twitter. We don't know whether, that wasn't, by the way, their response wasn't in response to Trump, but it's the same mentality. And, you know, that, well, we don't know if this is going to be a safe environment. Then leave.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall.
Oh my gosh. No, because you're right. And
to
we talk about this.
There.
It's, you know, here's the meeting. Well, we don't believe that it's safe for anybody. What do you mean safe? It's people tweeting. And you know what? Here's another thing. For anybody worried about Trump or James Woods or anybody, you can block them.
Kathy Griffin?
Right. Kathy Griffin, you can block them. You don't even have to follow them. And if somebody else is retweeting them, you can undo their retweets so they can't, so you can't see their, you know, there is a way to do all that and control what you see. See, it wasn't about, oh, this is dangerous. It's not dangerous. You believe it's dangerous to engage in thought from the opposition. You believe it's dangerous that people that think a certain way, and you know what? It could go to the extreme. You know, the conspiracy theorists out there or whatever it is. But here's what I believe, and you and I have talked about this when it comes to social media for a long, long time. Because, I mean, going back to the Facebook, you know, stuff when, you know, people were, and people that I know and love were posting or sharing something that I knew wasn't real. And it was like, okay, fine. Not going to get into it here. If it comes up in a discussion, that's fine. But I'm an adult, and, you know, people are capable of making their own decisions and finding the truth for themselves. But the left can't have that, because the truth doesn't exist and shouldn't exist in a conversation, according to them. You can't have opposition. You can't have anybody asking questions. That will not serve them, and they know that, so they must get angry or become a victim. CBS News, you're not a victim. Stop it. Grow up. Nobody cares whether you're on Twitter or not. It's always been anybody that puts any confidence in your work. That's it. They were there to follow whatever stories you're covering. Full stop. Nobody cares about you trying to portray yourself or your reporters as victims. You can make the choice as a company and say, you know, whether it's CBS News or New York Times or any of the major mainstream liberal media groups, go ahead. If you want to say, oh, well, none of our reporters, we should not subject them to. They're reporters. They're supposed to be out in the real world reporting on the worst things about the world. Think about that. I mean, again, war, natural disasters, and things and tragedies that happen all the time. They're exposed to a number of things, and I believe they're capable. But what you want to do is portray Elon Musk or Twitter or Trump or conservatives or any opposing views as dangerous.
Well, and you know, that's when you look at it, and we've had this discussion in the past, as have others. You know, why does the left wish to censor? What is it about it? Why does the right understand that, well, no, let everybody come on, and if somebody's on the far left and they put out something, well, yeah, let's, you know, now if it's your platform and you can, if you allow it on there and it's defamatory, well, then you can get in trouble. But
yeah, right. And that should be controlled.
But when you're talking about, for example, the left would like to censor anybody who says a biological male cannot be a biological female because they say so.
Right.
They would wish to censor that.
Right.
Why? And it gets into the point, it gets into, you know, because one of the things is we have always looked at, especially over the last 20 years and where the left has gone, and the fact of, but it doesn't, there is no critical thinking here. You know, you and I went way, way back, and we always would wonder, why is the first thing that the left throws at you is that you're racist when clearly you're not? And now racism to the left is the belief that if you believe in the individual and the autonomy of the individual and that you should judge somebody as an individual, that's viewed as racist. And non-racism is basically judging people by groups. And you say to yourself, how can it get like this?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any critical thinking sense. Well, it's because the left has adopted It isn't a political idea to them. It is a religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a religion. It's a faith. If I was going to call it something, religious tribalism, that it doesn't matter what's said as long as the people in your tribe are stating it, then it becomes gospel no matter how insane it is.
And the actual truth is blasphemous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not necessarily because the reason we believe this is because we are more compassionate than you. And who was it talking about it? Oh, I saw a Jordan Peterson on with the Prime Minister of Alberta. Well, I'm sitting there laying on the couch going, can I make it into work tonight? That happened to come up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, she's just great. She's just great. Mm-hmm. You know what they're trying to do up there? What they're trying to do is get, like, Saskatchewan and Manitoba. You know, Manitoba has ports. They're trying to get around the federal government. They're going to go to the courts to get around the federal government because what they're saying is, just like here in the United States, the provinces are supposed to have a hell of a lot more power than the federal government is allowing them to have.
Right, yeah.
And they said, we get to produce it, but they won't let us do the pipelines.
Right.
So that's how they stop us. We want to produce this. And so what they're thinking is, well, look, we have a right to trade between each other. The provinces, you know, under the Canadian Constitution, can trade with each other. And it's like, well, why can't we do a pipeline that's approved through the provinces that gets us to a port and keep the federal government out of it?
Right.
And one of the reasons is because the way it's set up, and I didn't know this, that they talk about the fact that the federal government really collects all the taxes and then gives it back to the provinces. And it's like, well, that's interesting. It goes, except for Quebec. Quebec gets to collect their own, and then they get to send it to the federal government, what they believe the federal government should be getting. But because Alberta is a energy-producing state, they send way more money out than they ever get back. And they're like, so here's where we're at right now. The federal government, this is of Canada and Trudeau, they want as much money as they can get from us from the fossil fuels that are produced to take care of what goes on in the major population centers, mostly in the east.
Right.
And then they're trying to kill. They can't stop us from producing it, but they're trying to kill us by not letting us transport it anywhere out of the country.
Right.
So they want the money, and at the same time, they send the money back to kill the source of that money that they're using.
Right.
It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you see stuff like that, but we've talked, they started talking about climate change, and she started talking about, and Jordan Peterson, about something that we talked about, the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
Except for Biden, everybody involved in energy in his administration said, no, you'll make global warming worse if you shut down the pipeline.
Right.
The U.S. on natural gas. U.S. has cut, you know, from like 2000 to 2015, global warming gases by 15%. Nobody came close to that anywhere else in the world. Anybody in any, Paris Accords, Kyoto Protocol, whatever, nobody else matched that. The left forgets that. They don't bring that into the discussion that, wait a minute, you don't have the high moral road because you're actually endorsing something that by your own standard, as you and I have said on the air many times, hurt your own cause.
Yes.
Why would you be for it?
Right.
Because they really don't care about that. All they care about is religious loyalty to the tribe. Whatever the tribe says, even if it does the opposite of intended of what they claim the goal is, that's okay because it's not about critical thinking. It's blind faith religion to the tribe. And
right.
I thought it was really interesting stuff that they were talking about because we've asked that question. Why don't they care when they do something opposite of what they claim their goal is? Why is there no revolution at all? Why isn't anybody upset on the left?
Right. We've asked that a million times.
Because it's religion not based on anything except tribalism. What our leadership says goes. We don't question anything. If you questioned, then you're shunned.
Right. Yep.
But we've seen the liberal circular firing squad come out slowly here in the last couple of years.
Well.
But not on climate change.
Well, they lost Greta.
Oh, they did lose her, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because she actually told the truth. It's not about saving the planet. It's about socialism.
Right? It is. It's about.
It's about power and control.
Yep. Greenwashing.
Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You want to know how you can spot bias? You can spot bias by what is not asked. A lot of the conservative media on Jake Tapper. He had Hakeem Jeffries on, who was supposed to represent Jeffries, who is the front runner to replace Nancy Pelosi for Speaker of the House.
Right.
Did a long interview with Jake Tapper. Not once did Jake Tapper ask him about election denial, denialism.
Right.
Not once.
Right.
And it just shows you that every single Republican would be asked that same question, especially if they were going to be in any type of authoritative position.
Right.
And, you know, Jeffries coming in and one of the biggest deniers that Trump won in 2016, even after 2020, he was saying, well, Trump was never a legitimate president because he didn't win in 2016
right. Because
of Russia collusion. That gets lost as if it doesn't even exist on the Democratic side.
Right, right.
And they just pretend it doesn't happen, but it happened.
Right. Well, it's the Associated Press and the whole Hunter Biden laptop thing. There's no evidence. You know, just wave your wand and make it disappear. The magic of liberalism. Pretend it doesn't exist.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, we're Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today, and you can listen when you want. You know, I was talking about yesterday, just on the couch after I got all my work done, and, you know, just because I didn't feel well, and upper respiratory infection, which I'm going to blame on you, by the way.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I watched a variety of different things yesterday, and told you I was watching the Jordan Peterson interview with the Alberta Prime Minister, and then before that, it was a Christmas Story Christmas.
Yeah, so you told me you watched that. That's the sequel
to A Christmas Story.
To A Christmas Story.
Yes, and it was, of course, a lot of the reviewers didn't like it.
Yeah, okay, come on.
It was like, well, you have to know what you're going in for. This, I laughed. Right. I laughed. I mean, I thought it was perfect. I'm not going to give all the details out like I did to you, but but it honors, the movie really honors the father's character.
Well, the thing is that it's more of a revisiting. You're not trying to recapture the magic.
No.
You're just revisiting what the magic was about.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, it's, if you think about it, A Christmas Story really was nostalgia. It was through the narrator. Ralphie was the narrator, essentially. The character was the narrator as an adult looking back on his life. So he was connecting in a nostalgic way. It came out in the 80s, but it wasn't about the 80s. It was about the 50s, 60s, whenever it was. So these were, you know, it was built on that kind of that nostalgia that a lot of us lived through that era, whether it was the, you know, 60s or 70s, mm-hmm. and many of those same elements, department store Christmases and, you know, and decorating, and then the Christmas morning rituals and all these things. Many of us lived through that, and so it was nostalgic for us on that level. Then you get to the new one, and basically, I would caution against anybody expecting it to recapture the magic. Again, you're trying to revisit the magic.
No, it was,
and that's the only point. And yeah, that's
it was great. I found myself laughing a couple times as they did some of the flashbacks. But you know, the original one was supposed to be, even though it was done in the mid '80s, was supposed to be in the late 40s after World War II.
Yeah.
And so when he wanted that BB gun, I related to that because in the 60s, when I was a kid, I wanted a BB gun more than anything. So I didn't see the movie. The movie came out like 84. I didn't see it. And my nephew always gets on my case because this is when my nephew, when he was a kid, would spend a lot of time with me. I watched it with my nephew for the first time, probably in 1994. So it was out 10 years and I had never seen the movie. And we watched it together, and I went, how could I miss this? And he still remembers. He says, he will tell me, Uncle Gary, the funniest moment I've ever spent with you ever was when Ralphie came down the stairs, and you saw the faces on the on the feet.
Yeah, yeah.
The doctor would have the padded feet pajamas right. that he was in.
Right.
And that moment, I mean, we sat there and just died. He said, that's the funniest moment I've ever spent with you. So, but the BB gun, even at that time, it would have been in my mid 30s, but we're close to 40. But I saw that and went, wow, this is great. I related to that. And so then this one was done in the 70s, and it was done right after the father dies. I mean, he gets to call his father. They don't get into, and I think it was good that they didn't, because I know some of the criticism, they didn't go to the funeral home, and the whole point was, we're going to do the funeral after Christmas because dad would want that.
Yeah.
And so but I mean, they brought all the characters. You have to suspend reality a little bit because you have to understand that in order to make the point, all of the original characters, except Scott Farkas, he made a major life change. But except for Scott Farkas, everybody else was really the child in themselves that was alive back then was still very apparent in the adults that you saw today.
Yeah.
So they're the same kind of fighting back, like nothing had changed. Ralphie still daydreams, but it's in a different situation. You know, job interview. I'm not going to give the details.
Just
giving maybe a job interview, and he's daydreaming about winning a Pulitzer Prize, and everybody going, "Yay, Ralphie is great," and all that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's still, and all of a sudden, Ralph, and, And so, you have to suspend the belief of, well, this isn't realistic. Well, none of it was, But it was. I thought it was great, and how they honor the father throughout it, especially at the old man. You know, because that's what he called him, right? He was the old man,
right?
And I told you the twist at the end, but I don't want to tell everybody else the twist at the end, because the twist at the end is really, when you realize what the twist at the end is, your response is, oh,
yeah, I couldn't believe Iron Man dies. But it's, you know, you look at it and I think it's, and you know, again, I couldn't even remember what the timeline of the original movie was, because so many things related to, I think, a couple, two or three maybe generations.
Yes, it did. Yeah,
of those Christmas moments and traditions, and the process of going through Christmas, you know, especially when you have multiple kids, but also in a day and age when you just went outside and your parents would go play, get outside. You know, you would just leave and you would just go hang out with other kids in the neighborhood, or you would walk to school with, where, you know, few kids these days, you know, do that. I know some still do, but these, all these items that are, you know, nostalgia based. Well, you can look at the pajamas, right? That represents all the things that mom and dad got you that you really didn't want to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be, for me, it was a pair of checkered pants, polyester slacks. And it was like, who in the, and it wasn't like black and white checkers. It was green and white. And I'm like, green and white? I mean, give me some blue jeans, some tennis shoes, right? But then one day we went to a petting zoo, and I'll just say this. A young lamb took care of those pants forever, and we had to throw them away because mom was not going to wash that out of those slacks
well,
in her washer.
In the original Christmas story, I mean, because whether it was the late 40s or the 60s or 70s and – you know, for example, when they get the socks and they just throw them over their, you know, getting clothes, you know, because you'd always get, you know, mom and dad, well, here's, you know, your present is socks and underwear.
Yeah,
that's not a present. And
right.
So any generation would relate to that. Me wanting to get a BB gun. And I remember that I went to like day camp and I probably, now he was about 8 or 9 years old. I probably would have been 10 when I went to day camp, and they had, and I won the BB gun championship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a better shot, and I wanted that I wanted a BB gun, so my parents just would not get me a BB gun. Probably it was a good choice for them not to, because I would eventually abused it.
I got one, and we had BB gun wars in San Antonio when I lived there.
We had slingshot wars. We would put the little crab apples in slingshot. I mean, they'd hurt.
No, and, I was going to say a slingshot can be a lot more painful if use it right.
we all had slingshot. We made them. I mean, we made slingshots.
Oh yeah.
Out of branches and trees.
Out of branches. Yeah.
And so we. But I mean, those are the things that you. And then this is where we go back to. Can you believe that we survived all this with all of our limbs and our eyesight and everything else? That, you know, that's what made it, I think, so, and I don't know. I mean, I guess I would have a question to ask. Is that movie, because I know my niece loves that movie more than anything. When we get, and she's now in college, but I can guarantee when we, if everything is cool and I can make it back and I'm better and we gather at my sister's house on Thanksgiving, she'll say Christmas Story.
Yeah.
She gets it, and you just wonder, well, is it more male centric? By the way, am I saying anything taboo here? Is it more male centric because it's about boys? Or is it universal? Now my sisters, they understand it completely. They understand.
Yeah, right.
Then again, my sisters were also part of me getting the famous Gary McNamara guillotine.
Yeah, that story, by the way, is on the way next month.
Yeah, the best, my Red Ryder BB gun. The guillotine. Even though I never knew, I never wanted it. My brother just got it for me. But
yeah, right.
It was. So when this the new one, mindless, great fun. With a great message of honoring your father.
You know, I think sometimes we forget how to enjoy things. I've said this for a while. Having 4 children and 8 grandchildren, there are you know, 2 ways to go to the movies. You can sit there and roll your eyes, you know, or you can just kind of understand why your kids want to see that movie, right? And I'll never forget my 2 oldest. I'm going to get in trouble. Oh, my gosh. My oldest turns 40 today.
Wow.
Okay, I need a nap.
Do I.
Yeah. The movie Titanic. they had already gone to the movie theater multiple times to see it. Remember that whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
Girls were going to see it because Leonardo DiCaprio was, you know, that was, I think, his first major role on the big screen that really just went over the top and killed at the box office. And I thought, okay. And then on Christmas Day, they wanted to go see it again. And my wife said, well, they want to go see it again. And my son didn't object, so we're like, okay. So we go and we see it, and it's like, all right, you know. And the critical thinker in me is like, oh, that never happened. These people weren't on the boat. And that's not even – and it was like, well, there were some cool things in terms of the cinematic presentation of it.
Yes.
Scary things that, you know, and then you think about the actual souls that were lost and all that. And it was like, okay. But really, you know, my daughter's enjoying that movie or my son enjoying, you know – whether it was superhero movies or whatever it was when he was younger, mentioned the passing of Kevin Conroy, the voice of animated Batman for years recently. And that connected to me because my son was very young when those started coming out. And so you think about those nostalgic things and all these, you know, also the forms of entertainment. And I had to, as a father, it worked for me. Change my mindset. These days, I don't have to do that because the kids aren't around. My grandkids come over every once in a while, but they get control of the TV. You know, I have my TV back in the room if I need to watch something else. But it's always been about knowing why they enjoy it, right? And mm-hmm. just kind of settling it and not trying not to invest too much into it. But there is a great value in that nostalgic, you know, presentation of revisiting something. You know, it's like, you know, the Friends reunion. I don't really get it. It's like if you want a reunion, you can still watch the shows on streaming, you know, but they did it. And it was like, okay, the fans enjoyed it. You know, what
it
do
was
I know?
Okay. I saw it was yeah, and I know. Was, I never really watched Friends that
right,
much.
Right,
I mean, I knew like, it. I'd seen it.
Right.
But
exactly.
it was good. Oh, they didn't film it in Cleveland. They filmed it. They recreated the entire street, Cleveland Avenue, for the Christmas Story Christmas. In Bulgaria.
Bulgaria.
Excuse me. Wow. Hungary and I think Hungary and Bulgaria, I believe
wow.
it was.
Wow.
I'm doing this from memory now, and I've got no sleep, so wow. hopefully. But, yeah, they didn't do it in the United States.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
I guess it was.
Vince Vaughn produced it with
yeah,
him.
It's working on a budget, you know, right?
Yeah, but they redid the whole street, and they talked to Peter Billen. No, it was the actor, I can't think of his name, who portrayed Scott Farkas.
Hmm.
Then when he saw it, he called everybody else up and he goes, "You guys, you got to come down here right now. You got to go see this. Hmm. It looks exactly like Cleveland Street."
Yeah, wow.
And they were all freaked out because when you're there, when you see it, you're like, "Oh no, that it can't be." Nope, they recreated everything.
Wow,
and you can't tell.
Wow, maybe they had to go to an older part of the world to recreate something that you may not be able to create today. I don't know.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. I did see an interview with Zach Ward, who was Scott Farkas, and he did an interview, and he said the reason they filmed, the primary filming was in Bulgaria. They did some in Hungary. They did some again in some shots in Cleveland and Toronto to get some shots, but the primary filming was there. The house was there. And the reason why? They did it in February of this year. Excuse me. February of 22 is when they filmed it.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to have a place that had snow. They couldn't afford to make snow. They said the reason they said.
I was wondering about
they
that.
They said we couldn't do it in L.A. And they didn't say why they couldn't do it in Cleveland.
Right.
But the fact is they said we needed to rebuild. We needed to build sets. And it would have been way too expensive to build those sets in the United States. Think about this. And they said we're not a $100 million film. So in order to give it its authenticity, we actually built everything in the sets, the outside of the homes and everything else. In Bulgaria, and it was a heck of a lot cheaper to do so, and we had snow, so we didn't have to make snow.
Okay, that makes sense. Yep. Yeah, they often do that. When the TV show Fargo was filming, they had to go where there, you know, was lots of snow, and you can't count on it being in certain places. It's like, okay, hit or miss on the snow, but part of the underlying nature or feel of the show is that everything is covered in snow for the entire season of the show. And so for this, yeah, you got to have the snow. Yeah. It's like another character in the movie.
Now it's not in the movie theaters. People, I'm sure we're going to get that. It's, I bought HBO Max for 1 month.
Yeah. All right.
So whatever it was, $9.99, $10. Yeah. I think I bought it without commercials.
Right.
So it's $14.
You know what I wonder?
For the month. And then it's like I'll watch every movie I want to watch over the next month.
You know what I wonder about the future of HBO and streaming in general, but HBO with Discovery and everything else and all the moves that are, you know, seemingly in response to what people, viewers are responding to. You see, if it turns out that there's great interest in a movie like this, then there are probably going to be other movies that come that direction from that kind of feel, for whatever it is. And I don't know. I don't know if, because they're scrapping so many movies right now, and we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of productions saying, all right, we're not going to do this. And I think that there is a growing sentiment, or I guess maybe a growing demand for things that don't have a message. As you mentioned, just sit down, watch it. It takes your mind off of things for, you know, the hour or two. And it's, you don't have to invest that kind of thought into it.
Which brings us to Disney coming up next.
Yep.
The development of conservative talk. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. Hopefully we sound okay, both Eric and I, down under the weather here with voices that so far have lasted.
Yeah. So far.
And as far as I'm concerned, I got it from you. You know, we're talking about Christmas.
I'm sure you did, actually.
We're talking about Christmas, the Christmas Story Christmas, the movie that that HBO Max, came out with, the follow-up to A Christmas Story, and just talked about, it's entertaining. You know, just plain entertainment. There's no agenda except to honor the father, which anybody who's a Christmas Story fan will not object to how the movie ends at all.
Yeah, right.
And so it's honoring the father, and so it's Peter Billingsley and Vince Vaughn. They knew what they were doing,
right?
They knew what they were doing. Then we come to Disney, and the story of Disney over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That was unbelievable. When I first saw it, I saw a tweet on it, and I said, "Well, no way, Iger's not coming back. That's not going to really happen, really."
Yeah, being reinstated as the CEO of Disney.
For 2 years.
Replacing Bob Chapek. And, clearly there's a number of problems they have to address. But, it really is this ever-growing environment of competing for entertainment dollars. You know, we were talking earlier about HBO Max, and you can add whatever streaming into that, including Disney Plus. Disney Plus invested heavily in buying certain properties. Star Wars, all the Jim Henson properties, Marvel, I think they bought the band Judas Priest. I'm not sure, but they bought a lot of properties, basically trying to get this wide array of entertainment libraries in order to fold in under theirs. And this was, you know, years after Netflix. There were companies that wanted to go and buy Disney, by the way, for the same reason in years past. And Netflix had Disney properties and, you know, movies and shows on their streaming. And then everything became really proprietary. Now you have with HBO Max, basically under the umbrella of Warner Brothers Discovery. You know, you're likely going to have more and more of this, you know, this these huge entertainment conglomerates shoving all their properties into one streaming source, and then you jump on it. Disney ran into a couple of things, I think. But it's all under the same problem and approach. You know, there were a number of things that were on Disney Plus, and it was like, okay, well, there are certain things in the library we're not going to show anymore, or we're not going to, you know, have, or mm-hmm. we'll put a warning up, or,
right.
you know, we'll label them a certain way. And it's like, oh, okay, fine. And, you know, then there is the agenda. You know, we talked about studios and which includes Warner Brothers, the aforementioned Warner Brothers and others that, you know, are shelving a number of things. And it's not 100% that it's because there was a woke message or this message. I think it's the erosion of the audience because you're building in that direction. That's my opinion, though. They may tell you, in fact, often do, cite something very different as a reason for making changes. Well, when you scrap a movie that you already put $200 million into,
there's a problem.
There's a problem. And then tell people, we're not even going to put it on streaming. We're not putting it anywhere. Nobody will see this, the Batgirl movie. And so, all right. You knew that when you were making it, you know, if it was that bad, you change directors or whatever. You get somebody to punch up the script. You do something. But they came in. And by the way, the merger with Discovery came in April of this year. We talked about when John Malone, who is part of Liberty Media, who is part of Warner Brothers Discovery now, talking about CNN and their approach to news and basically implying that, you know, it shouldn't be about agenda. It should be just about reporting the news. These are things that, you know, you have to factor in. And a major company like Disney jumped into it when they went after what they thought was just a political move, going after the current governor of Florida and the legislative body. And we've said from the beginning, what they're not seeing is they're going to war with parents. And that was the parental rights bill and how the liberals went after it. And the company, Disney, you know, I mean, they are massive industry in Florida, and decide that they're going to, you know, draw a line in the sand. As we said, not with legislators or governors, it's with the parents. And your fight was in an effort to teach children sexualized content starting at the age of 5. You won't win that war with parents.
Well, you talk about shelving a movie that had cost $200 million, and you're like, number one, in any business, you say, how the hell did you get to that point?
Right.
How did you get to this point? Well, you spent it and you didn't figure this thing out. That's unacceptable. But then when you take, because I look at the, you know, I'll never forget DeSantis saying, Disney, you wish, I'm paraphrasing here, Disney, you wish that it should be appropriate to teach sexualized content in schools to a 5-year-old? You really wish to die on this hill? Do you really? And it was such an incredible moment, because that's what Disney focuses on. It's all kids.
Yeah.
And for Disney to do that, you take those two together And you've got to be on the board of directors of Disney, and you've got to be saying something's got to be done here, because this is just a – the only thing keeping us going is that longstanding name that we've had and the reputation that we've had for the longest time. And maybe people will say, well, you know, that's just a blip here or something like that. But it's not a blip when you endorse teaching sexualized content to five-year-olds.
Yeah.
You can't win that. And your only job is to get parents to take their kids or to buy their DVDs or to take them to Disney World.
Yep. You know, and
I mean, it was so unbelievable.
And to pay for the streaming every month and all these things where you invite basically that brand into your home over and over and over again. And here's the thing. You know, Iger thanked Chapek for his, you know, leadership through COVID. Well, we can, you can look at COVID, post-COVID, entertainment choices, and especially when you get into, you know, inflation, possible recession, all of these things factor into how, of course, entertainment money, if there is any, is going to be spent. And so you have to build that image and that brand to be long-term in the minds of the parents, but also in those children who will one day, many of them, also become parents. That's what you do. You build that, you know, legacy branding to go generation after generation. And those are the things that you can't do if you're getting into cultural wars, especially one like they were getting into in Florida, that you're just not going to win it. You aren't. And once you have done that kind of damage, I don't know if there is a way to rebuild it. I don't know how you rebuild that trust again, because many parents are looking at it going, and I think during COVID, when they were, when remote learning, you know, I've heard this, I don't know how many times, parents being in the room while they could, you know, I mean, or maybe, you know, down the hall, whatever, but they could hear what was going on in the virtual classroom. And it was like, whoa, what was that? Taking note, being more involved. And homeschooling had a bit of a role during that whole thing, but parents were learning and they were being more involved. And as and then what that does is that kind of creates this whole new slate where you have to rebuild the trust all over again, whether it's a brand like Disney, whether it's, you know, the teaching environment, whatever it is. You look to protect your kids and say, look, I want to make sure, you know, that I'm aware of things that are going on. And if I don't trust a brand, it's very simple to not give them money.
Well, when it's your kids, too, and you start talking about something as endorsing such a radicalized concept of teaching sexualized content to five-year-olds, I that imagery is so bad to the vast majority of parents out there. I don't, I've always wondered, how do you ever get by? You make it by it with a certain percentage of the left that doesn't want to admit what Disney was endorsing.
Yeah.
That, you know, just go, oh, so don't say gay. They didn't want to say, nothing to do with saying gay. Nothing to do with that.
No.
It had to do with five-year-olds. And so you have a number of people that are just in denial about what that law or what the left wanted to do and what that law was actually about. And then what Disney said about it, because that's what it got down to. Should we be teaching sexualized content to five-year-olds and six-year-olds and seven-year-olds?
Right.
And the average parent is going to say, no, absolutely not. No, we don't do that. No, let them be children. And the fact that it's Disney puts into mind to people that no matter what they say, that if they can put in the message that they want in a subliminal way or whatever, I believe that they will. You can't win that argument.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's, those are the things. And so you're fighting that battle, that war with parents who decide if you get their money. Over their children. You're fighting with them over their children. Why would you ever do that? The only goal is to make sure that you provide your mission statement should be providing a very family-friendly, safe form of entertainment that parents can trust. That's a no-brainer.
Right.
Expensive all day long, and parents were willing to overpay for those moments with their kids. Now, you decided to go to war with them. How do you think that's going to turn out?
I don't know. It's like I said, you and I always talked about what was the boardroom when they decided, let's go after DeSantis here.
Right.
Like, did anybody stand up and say, we're Disney? Do you even know?
Right.
You know, we're Disney, right? Do you understand what we are?
Right.
We don't advocate teaching sexualized content to 5-year-olds.
Right.
We're Disney. And nobody apparently stood up and said, you people are nuts.
Right.
So that means that means you got to bring somebody in that was CEO before it got to this point.
Yeah.
Wonder if he's going to say anything or put out a statement about what Disney wishes to do. Because you can't reverse. If you reverse, the left will go crazy.
He'll say things, but I don't know how you approach what happened in Florida.
No, neither do I. Except remember the statement they came out with, we're going to stay out of politics? Remember that came out about?
Yeah, with like through ESPN and all that, yeah. Yeah, that worked out well, didn't it?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We never got to talk about CBS leaves Twitter and then comes back. I mean, that was just we did mention it, but I mean, it's just we didn't talk about it in any detail, but
it's just honestly, it's so sad. It really is. You know, watching why would anybody in a meeting suggest, well, we need to, because I think they thought they were going to be heroes. Well, we'll quit, and then everybody else will quit behind us. Okay, we're quitting. We're quitting, everybody. We mean it. We're leaving now.
Yeah, I was wondering whether it was going to be followed by NBC and ABC.
That's what I think they thought, that all the liberal media would and major media groups would jump off Twitter when they did, and nobody did, and they were like, okay, well, we're not leaving, but we're going to watch it closely. What does that even mean?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.